Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. One of your favorite guests and mine is back today to talk about a whole bunch of things we should all be looking at a little more closely, maybe, than we have in the past. Thank you for joining me, Jack Cashel.
Hey, Mel, I'm always it's always a pleasure for me and happy to do it.
Well, I'm really lucky to have formed a really nice relationship with you over the years because you prolifically look into things that, you know, they're just passed over. They go away with the news cycle and people kind of go on to the next thing. And first and foremost, I did want to bring up that you are right now writing a book about Ashley Babbitt and the women of January 6th. So I wanted to ask you a little bit. You've been researching this for months. You'd share a little bit of what you found and all of this research, what it's doing in your mind to kind of frame this this narrative that is unknown largely.
Well, in fact, you know, tomorrow I'm going to Washington to attend the trial of one of the women I'm profiling. Her name is Rebecca Lavrenz. She's a great grandmother, right? The fact that they had bothered to arrest and try a woman, a very prayerful, very deeply Christian woman, who went to the Capitol to pray for the nation when the doors on the east side, which is the more orderly side of the Capitol, opened. She took that as her sign that she should walk in. She did. She prayed for about 15 minutes, walked out, and now is facing his, you know, a year in prison. If the jury, if the judge so deems, the jury is sure to convict her.
Right.
They have 100% conviction rate. They brag about that, Mel.
I know.
The prosecutors. We have 100% conviction rate. Doesn't that say something about the nature of these? I mean, they should have like kangaroos bouncing around the court in this place. It's so obvious.
And no change of attitude. Merrick Garland and the FBI put out statements, and especially that Matthew Graves, of how proud they are of themselves regularly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and you had written an article last week about the, you know, the depravity, the lack of humanity, the lack of, you know, human kindness, brotherly love. I mean, it's totally gone. And the people cheering this on, there's like bloodlust for these people, a grandmother and many others you're profiling, including Ashley Babbitt.
No, in fact, it reminds me, and it's the metaphor I use throughout my book, because when I watch this, it reminds me of, you know, Madame Defarge in the 1789 Paris knitting there while one person after another is heading to the guillotine to get their head chopped off.
Yeah.
And the crowds cheer every time a head hits the basket. That's what we are in Washington. You know, in 2020, Trump did 25% better in Washington than he did in 2016 election,
wow,
which means he went from 4% of the vote to 5% of the vote. So 95% of that jury pool hates him, right?
Right.
This is Washington. And not only that, but they've established this paradigm that the city was under attack, right?
Yeah.
When you read the report put out by the ACLU of DC, signed off by every other chapter, all 51 chapters, it sounds like the ACLU of ancient Rome talking about the Visigoths and the Vandals attacking Rome, sacking, rummaging through our neighborhoods, you know, attacking our citizens. It's crazy stuff.
Yeah. And it was very contained is the truth. And it was short. You know, I've had on Steve Baker, who was recently arrested, a real journalist who was actually committing journalism that day. And,
right.
You know, when you talk to him, he was the videos were released to him. It's actually a very small time frame that any violence at all occurred. And they're making it like it was a siege on DC. And now, obviously, we know you've reported on it before. I have too. Trump did request 10,000 National Guards troops,
right,
from what they heard. And they buried that all this time. And the January 6th committee didn't even go there, let alone I hear that the January 6th committee has destroyed all of their evidence of anyone that was exculpatory.
Yeah, no, and not only that, but he tweeted several times during the first couple hours saying, hey, the police are our friends, you know,
yeah,
blah, 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 blah. Now, what's interesting about the violence too, Mel, is that it's almost all concentrated at one opening, what they call the Lower West Terrace Tunnel. Yeah. It's called the tunnel opening there. That's where Roseanne Boylan was killed.
Oh, God, yeah.
That lasted for 2 hours on and off. And yet, you know, so the cars, the cops there are acting like they're defending the Alamo. Meanwhile, cops everywhere else in the building are acting like tour guides, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they're ushering people around, and virtually all the interactions inside the Capitol were friendly.
Yeah, and somehow all of the news channels were right there exactly where the violence was. It's very strange.
It may not be so strange.
Yeah, I know.
And, you know, what's interesting is that I think Trump inadvertently, probably, threw a major curve to the plotters. And that is, the witching hour was going to be 1 p.m., right?
Right.
If you look at the video, that's where you see, what's his name? Roy, help me out here. Ray Epps.
Oh, yeah.
How can I forget this name?
Right.
Ushering his crowd
right
down Pennsylvania Avenue towards the Capitol. Now, this crowd did not go to the speech. I don't know who these people are.
Right.
But they didn't go to the speech because Trump is still speaking. They're marshaling him. You see him like herding cattle down. And they get there just before 1 o'clock. At 1 o'clock is when the bombs are discovered, right? At 1 o'clock, Pence announces that he's not going to short circuit the process. But Trump's people aren't even there now. He started an hour late.
Right.
Just the day before, he announced that he'd start at 11. He started at noon.
Right.
So his people aren't part of the group I think they had hoped they'd have there. So anyhow, there's a lot of other plans that didn't go quite as planned. The most obvious is the presence of Kamala Harris in the Democratic National Committee headquarters there, right?
Right. Yeah.
Because what that meant was that the bombing was exposed in a bizarre way. It's kind of complicated. But just put this, just something to think about. Okay, Kamala Harris was just feet away when these bombs were going to explode by these horrible insurrectionists. She was within moments of being blown to smithereens, you know, if it weren't for some, you know, dog or cop or someone finding the bomb, except that we haven't heard a word about that because she wasn't supposed to be there. She's supposed to be over in Congress, right?
Right.
And their wires get crossed here. That said, for a year, the judges in the J6 cases were telling the juries that Kamala Harris was in Congress. That was one of the reasons why they had to up the ante on these protesters here. They put her in danger. They couldn't get their story straight. But she hasn't been able to exploit that.
No.
And that's very curious. You know, she'd be rushing to the microphone. I was within minutes of being blown up, you know. I haven't heard a word about that. Biden neither.
No. None,
right?
And Darren Beatty and other people have put out a video of after they supposedly found the bombs. Then there's like school kids walking by and like people walking by nonchalantly. And the woman that if this is a bomb with a timer on it, for God's sakes, it's an emergency. But there's actual video of them not treating it like it's an emergency. I mean, so many things about this, you know, and you wonder if it's incompetence, anything else. But also there's a whole wag the dog aspect to this that they actually brought in a producer from ABC News to produce the footage.
That's right. James Goldston, he was the same. Yeah, he was the president of ABC News at one point. He was the guy who, in Amy Klobuchar, remember this? She went on TV to talk about, actually it was a hot mic moment. She got picked up saying, they've suppressed the Epstein story for 3 years here. We had this 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Goldston was her boss.
Yeah,
he was the one
that.
Responsible for suppressing that.
Yeah, of course he was, because that's how it works there. You know, you fail up in this deep state situation. And also for her with that whole thing, she was upset that she didn't get to break the story. Not that 3 years ago she had evidence she should have brought to the FBI and the police.
Right.
in on her. But no, it was about the story. And yeah, that guy did that. And then the other part of that whole thing is that Benny, what's his name? Benny Thompson. Is that the main guy?
Right. The head of the committee. Yeah.
Right. He had filed a lawsuit with the Wile E. Coyote to Trump's roadrunner in Lawfare, Norm Eisen, to charge Trump with insurrection right away, months before they even established this. So he was not unbiased. He believed they him and Eisen were using like they do with all Lawfare, the KKK thing, like act or whatever, to go after Trump as causing an insurrection that day. They filed the whole case and then they removed the case. And then he's the head of a unbiased committee. I mean, it's just so it's so outlandish at this point. And now you your book also you delve into the, you know, we all went through you wrote an amazing multiple projects on Obama and many other things. But we went through the whole hands up, don't shoot, police brutality, killing unarmed black men, you know, all that stuff for years. Suddenly we have a white unarmed veteran female that's like what all of 5'2" shot by a black cop. Yeah. Not that the colors matter, and he's treated like a hero,
right? Although for 8 months they did not release his name or any identity or anything to do with him. They suppressed that for 8 full months. Derek Chauvin had his name out without a half hour. I mean, literally,
we saw it on TV within minutes from one angle.
Yeah, right. And all we saw, actually, if you look closely, and I've seen this tape too many times, you know, it's like there's a Zapruder tape for me, you know, but you could see him. You could see him in profile. You could see that he was a black male. Most of the time, all you see is his arm outstretched with the gun, right?
Right.
But there's a flash second where you see him. So that much could have been known, and it was speculated on. And then when they roll him out finally for his formal coming out,
right?
I think it was either 7 or 8 months after the fact, after the shooting. His name had never been released to the public. During this time, he's staying at Andrews Air Force Base in this like paid for the government housing. He and his pet dog or whatever, right? And they roll him out with a total softball interview with Lester Holt, probably the least offensive black announcer on television. And then so Holt leads with this question, why haven't we heard from you sooner? And this is all scripted, by the way. I mean, he's obviously had these questions in advance. It's too obvious, you know?
Yeah.
And Byrd, Michael Byrd, the officer in question, says threats. And then Holt knows his follow-up question, racist threats? You know, right?
Yeah.
Yes, racist threats. Well, no one knew who he was. I mean, only a handful of people knew that he was black. It wasn't, no one in the media was talking about him or his race, you know, racist threats.
Well, it shouldn't matter, but they've made it matter. And then when this happens, it's erased. He's erased. And then he comes out in that interview. And I believe he got an award and a promotion, it appears.
Promotion, but, right.
Yeah. And also that other person, Pittman, too, was it seems to be very, very involved. And she got a promotion, too. She was, I guess, the head of the Capitol Police at the time is now it makes, you know, $500,000 or whatever in Berkeley. So, I mean,
I know what happened in her case. It's in a sense even worse because she was the head of intelligence for the Capitol Police. Oh. Right. Yogananda Pittman.
Right.
I think I get her first name right. It's a bunch of syllables.
Right.
That I'm not
I think
usually
it's that.
Familiar with.
Exactly.
And she was the head of intelligence. Right. And she admitted when she was testifying, she had no intelligence experience or training. But in Washington, if you're a wired black female, the world's your oyster. And so what happens is immediately, the next day, maybe the same day, Nancy Pelosi, who's in charge of the Capitol Police through the chief of the sergeant at arms, who is an all police officer, reports to her. And she immediately fires Steve Sund, who's the chief of the Capitol Police, who's really kind of a straight shooter, right?
Oh, yeah. I remember he went on Tucker and he tried to tell the truth.
Right.
And like next thing you know, Tucker was gone.
Yeah. And Pittman, who was responsible for intelligence, gets his job. She gets temporarily promoted. I mean, she was the one, she was suppressing evidence. That's what Sun says. She was not telling him what she knew. And so she then gets promoted to temporary acting chief of police. But then there's a curve here too, is that her fellow officers, by an overwhelming vote, refused to give her, a vote of confidence, right?
Oh, wow.
And she was gone. They had to get rid of her. And so what did they do? Between, I presume, that application that went to the University of California, Berkeley, I imagine had both Pelosi's fingerprints and Newsom's fingerprints all over.
Can you imagine? It's just a coincidence that she ends up there. But you brought up something I think that's pretty interesting that I don't see many people talking about. I follow this one professor, Torrance Stevens, on a Substack. He's a Black professor that speaks out a lot for the Black community and kind of like talking about things that are happening in a way that most people won't. He's very censored, but he's very, very smart. And he's pointed out a couple times that this elevation of which you just brought up, and it's not racist, but we have this new storyline in America. We've seen it with the Supreme Court justice, with Kamala Harris, with everything going on. With Yoga Ganda Pittman, where they've elevated the Black women to like superior status at some point in our country. And he had just written an article about it, just kind of being like, why did this happen? Like what? And also there's another side to that too, which is also they haven't elevated Black men to being far superior and above everyone else, but they really have done this. And there's a level of resentment and stuff, just like the woman at Harvard. Like, it just seems like this is some kind of manipulated storyline, and you've written books on this whole thing. So what do you make of that? Isn't it strange?
It is. And yet it's, you know, if you watch TV commercials,
I know.
I mean, how many commercials do we have the doofus white guy being instructed by the wise Black woman on some
everything,
little fix or another to help him find his way through some product or something, you know?
Yeah.
It goes on all the time.
Where did this come from? It's so weird to me.
And a lot of male Black commenters are hip to this also. Jason Whitlock, for instance, who's very good on this stuff.
I've seen multiple people, but this one guy just wrote it about the judges that they're putting up. Yeah. Like, why are they putting up all these judges that are the entire Supreme Court of New York is Black women? Like, I just don't know where this, like, and are they okay with this? Is this, because you've looked into this deeply, this whole manipulation of race, basically, you know, really kicked into high gear in one of your books about Obama, really shows like when he said the thing during the Zimmerman case, like really making it like he just brought back the whole race thing. But I just think it's so weird because I think this is a backfire thing. Like, I think everything with BLM is because now it's like there is a resentment growing. Like, why is this one race and gender type of person has to be the vice president, has to be a Supreme Court justice, has to be a Black woman? Well, what does that say about America?
You know, it's like they were watching Law and Order reruns and decided, oh, all the judges on Law and Order are Black, all the criminals are white. That must be the way it should be in real life, so we'll elevate them. No, it says, and I think Black males are hip, getting hip to this, that they're being dehumanized and made irrelevant. You know, we're being told that, you know, in the world of AI and intelligence and, internet and computers, that male work is irrelevant. Except I say, well, you know, I was having this discussion with one of my younger relatives about this, who's a gender studies major.
Oh, wow.
Who she had just driven from Baltimore to New Jersey and was lecturing us about, it was kind of cute. I mean, she was pretty cute and about toxic masculinity. She was giving us a little lecture as though she was right out of school. And I said, you know that every single road, every you drove on, every single bridge you drove over, you know, every single traffic light you stopped at, every single element of your trip from Baltimore to New Jersey was built and created and designed by men, right? You know that, right? Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Well, yeah, but you know,
I know. It's very dangerous what's happening.
Yeah.
This whole thing about men, because it is, I think that first of all, they're not talking about the level of suicide and depression and addiction right now that is rampaging through the community, but certainly very, very particularly the young white male of like early working age is having a very hard time making it in America right now. And nobody seems to even look at it.
Well, you know what they're doing, and this is, you know, if you look at college enrollment now, it's 6 to 4 female, which is a full reverse from a generation ago.
Right.
And in some schools, it's like 2 to 1 female. And those schools are beginning to, state schools are beginning to have to fire people because they're not getting enough enrollment, period.
Right.
It's because the males aren't going to college. They figured it out. What am I going to major in college? What, an English degree, a sociology degree? Political science? No, I'll go get my HVAC certification.
Right. I know. We need a lot more of that. But also the other part is we have a friend whose son wanted to have a internship. I think goes to Duke, wanted an internship at one of the big 5 accounting firms in New York, went to fill out the paperwork. And it literally says that you have to be a person of color or a female. I mean, I'm not kidding. Sure. In the internship to work free for the summer one of these places. And I believe that that's probably everywhere. Again, I think the entire BLM and everything after in the long run is causing a lot of resentment and a lot of division on purpose. And it's got very little to do with helping these people. Like you brought up, I just saw the things about medical school. I mean, and law school, it's ridiculous. It's like, so diminished white and Asian acceptance and like sky high. And I just, is this where we're headed? I mean, it's going to backfire. And it's not racist to say that America is 14% black. It's a fact. And the truth is that now they're saying that this group and specifically females in this group are superior. They're preferred. You know, it's very strange. I just think it's so upside down and not good for anyone, including them. Hi guys, thank you for watching the show. You know I'm always telling you to be prepared and expect the unexpected. Well, the Wellness Company has great medical emergency kits to make sure you can do just that. In a world where supply chain vulnerabilities threaten our access to life-saving medication, I highly recommend you get a Wellness Company medical emergency kit. With 8 essential medications, including amoxicillin, Z-Pak, and ivermectin, you can be prepared for any medical emergency that comes your way. They have a medical emergency kit, a contagion kit, a emergency travel kit, and a first aid emergency kit. To support your own health and support the Mel Kay Show, please go to twc.health/MelKay now and use code MelKay for big savings at checkout. Don't wait until it's too late. Take back control of your health today with the Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit. Because when it comes to your family's well-being, preparedness is key. The Wellness Company, empowering you to face the unexpected with confidence.
No, it's not. And it's dangerous in very tangible ways. A year or two ago, I edited a book for a guy named Dr. Stanley Goldfarb, who is the head of education at the University of Penn Med Center, which is massive, complex, a very important job. He was retiring, so he could get away with this, because they would have retired if he had, you know. And the book is called Take 2 Aspirins and Call Me by My Pronouns.
You know, it was 2 years ago, Wow.
I mean, he was at the very front edge of that. I'm editing the book and I am thinking, I guess this is outrageous, you know, what they're doing. Not just preferred admissions. See, once you have preferred admissions, then you have to prefer everything to make sure that those admissions make it all the way through. And to do that, not only do you have to, grade on a curve, whatever, but you have to pull the whole curriculum down.
Yeah, so of course.
You're throwing out science courses in favor of social justice courses. You know, you're having sections on climate change and guns and, you know, things that are just bizarre, random, left-wing talking points now stuck fully in the curriculum.
Yeah.
And it's dangerous because you're having, now, let's face it, and here's what happens also before they get to the operating room. You probably don't have to worry about that much because so many of the ones who are going through on the DEI curriculum,
yeah,
even before they graduate from medical school, have set up consulting websites where they consult with other people on DEI.
Oh, wow.
So a lot
of
these people will never practice medicine.
I saw somebody call it DEI. Didn't earn it.
Yeah, right. Very well said.
This is, but again, race relations were pretty good before Obama, I have to say, counting that most white people in America, or a good half of America, voted for him because they felt like it was a celebratory situation where we finally did it. Where we are now is so shocking. It should be so disturbing to everyone. And frankly, most people, you and I talking about this, you know, I'm already an anti-Semite and a racist and a bigot. Probably I'm a misogynist too. I get attacked over everything. But it's like, if we don't have these honest conversations, everyone loses. Not just, you know, our kids and future generations, but it's all a lie. It's all based on a lie, just like the lie of what you're talking about with January 6th and all of that. And the idea that our country, this whole thing is based on an idea that America, that they put out the idea that America's a failed place. We don't have good human rights. We don't have good equality. We don't have good, you know, we're violent, all of that. And then I feel like Holder and Obama and their friends put that in the sauce and just kept cooking it and cooking it and cooking it. And now we have people that actually just go about life as if that's true. And what do you make of that?
Well, it's in the numbers. I mean, when Obama was inaugurated, about 75 or 80% of the American people, more whites than blacks, but, you know, within a reasonable range, like 80 to 60 or whatever, thought that race relations in the United States were good, right?
Yeah.
By the time he left office, that number was in the 30s. Wow. I mean, that's
how
dramatic.
And I'm sure now it's much worse now. I can't even imagine what it is right now. And you know, the social media is really, you know, obviously, I think a toxic cesspool. But I have to say that they put up all these videos of like giant hordes of black kids going in. I mean, this is like a trend all over the internet, going into Target or CVS or wherever, or Rodeo Drive, and yet nobody goes to jail for any of this stuff. They're totally normalizing that behavior. And yet at the same time, they're telling us, well, these people are oppressed. So, you know, don't even look at that. And somebody sent me a lot of this, a former cop that sent me some stuff to my whistleblower website area. Like so many people are getting put into the database when they're arrested as white that aren't white. I mean, it's just, it's all being very manipulated. And the end game is what? Race war that destroys us from within? It's just so obvious right now.
You know, in fact, we had an interesting example. I live in Kansas City. And, you know, we had a Super Bowl parade, I guess that would have been in February, just last month.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had 185 murders in 2023. Just to put that in perspective, Omaha, which is the same population, had 30 murders, right?
Right.
Six times more. Our homicide rate, you know, before New York City started going downhill, was at 1.9 times higher than New York City's homicide rate. And, but it was all buried. It was all covered. We have no media and it doesn't get surface. And then we have the parade and there's a shooting at the parade. Someone's killed, innocent bystanders killed. And they rush for cover, right? The youths, you know, and they refuse to, when, as Ann Coulter said, and she talked about this with Bill Maher, you know, when the name or race isn't identified within 24 hours, you know who it is, right?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying about all this stuff. Just like the same thing with, well, we if we need a Supreme Court justice, it must be a black woman. If we need a vice president, it must be a black woman. At what time till people say, start to hate that start to look at that and think, well, you know, have resentment for that or for this or for the that it's so obvious.
Right, because not only, I mean, you want to raise yourself above racial stereotypes,
right,
you know, that sort of thing. But you'd like some honesty every now and then. So you know when you're, what do you call it, situational awareness. You know?
Right.
Jesse Jackson was quoted on saying this some years ago. He regretted ever saying it. It's a paraphrase, but it's very close. He said, "It bothers me that I feel relief when I'm walking down the streets of Washington, D.C. at night and I hear footsteps behind me and I turn around and see a white guy, right?
Well, yeah.
He feels relieved because he knows what the odds are. He knows that, you know, black males make up 6% of the population and commit 60% of the murders. If you say that,
you're a racist. And the other side of that is that they've never done anything to even try to end that. And that's because I believe that the whole goal of this controlled demolition of America team, I call them the fifth column or the parent company running America, are using these people. They're using people as weapons, and they don't do anything to help them. I really dug deeply recently into the homeless industrial complex. Talk about a racket. They are making billions of dollars on that. Why ever help the homeless? And then now that they have the illegals, they're putting them in hotels, getting them schooling, getting them food, getting them shelter, all this stuff. And it's like, did anyone ever think of doing that for the mentally ill homeless? Other than having another program with another set of contractors? My story was very much about Thrive New York City, such a fraud, and the de Blasio has walked away, $800 million disappeared. But, you know, this is the, when they talk about systematic racism and all this stuff, there's systematic something. But I think it's a lot more closer to corruption and money laundering because they can say that there's a problem.
Yeah. And, you know, but what they're having a problem with now, and to your point, and, you know, the whole notion of intersectionality basically is there's all of these marginalized and oppressed groups. And they basically sacrifice their own individual interests to come together as a collective for the sake of power.
Yeah.
Now, the through 2020, I mean, the Democrats knew their basic threat was they had control over the people they could put in the streets. And they went to, you know, the Chamber of Commerce and other people and said, hey, you want to see more like you've seen this summer?
Right.
Well, we're going to unleash the hordes on you if Trump wins. Now, however, they have mobs that they can't rent, you know?
Right, yeah.
The whole gossipy thing is a curveball. They weren't anticipating that. And the Gaza people may be crazy and may be dangerous, but at least they're kind of sincere, you know? So they think they have a cause.
Well, they've made it, they've normalized it. It's like the old Bezmenov, the dehumanization, demoralization crisis, and then normalization. They've normalized the idea that, you know, whatever your grievance is, you know, you can go out there and do whatever you want, and we're going to call it a peaceful protest. I mean, it's completely upside down.
But then you also have the black cohort, which had coexisted with the other parts of the intersectional coalition. Okay, they can live with the environmentalists, that doesn't matter. They can live with the gays, even. We just had to give up Christianity a little bit, but they were moving away from that anyhow. We could live with women, we could live with this, but illegal immigrants taking over their community centers, that's a new member of this coalition that they weren't really thrilled that it hit them at home, right?
Yes, yes.
So they have, if you're the one who's managing, actually Obama was very good at managing all these intersectional elements, right?
Right.
Because he was communist, gay, black. You know, he was whatever you needed.
Everything.
At the moment, you know?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Every group that he went into, he was one of them. Right.
Yeah, he was comfortable in all those worlds. It's like the joke, you know, a gay Muslim and a black walk into a bar, you know,
exactly.
And the bartender says, "What can I get you, Mr. President?" You know, it goes on from
exactly,
there.
Exactly, exactly.
But, Joe Biden doesn't have a clue how to handle these people. Some of them are out of control. And actually, the right's best hope is that they cannot control the chaos that they've launched, right? It's beyond their ability to marshal it for their own ends. Unlike 2020, where they did.
I think the biggest mistake, there's many, many mistakes. There's multiple, but one of the biggest is certainly that they are shipping, because sanctuary cities also happen to be, you know, places where there's a big inner city community. And that's where a lot of this is going. And also legal immigrants are getting more and more outspoken as to what they went through to come here, and that a lot of their family and friends that are back in their home countries are waiting 2, 3, 5 years, sometimes more, when they want to come here and work, and they can't get in. And yet this is happening, and it's not going to stop, because and people want to point to things. We talked years ago about the Clyde Piven strategy and this and that. whatever the case may be, the parent company that is public-private partnership, I think, is running America, really doesn't care at this point about any of us. And I really do wish that people would be more cognizant that, you know, all of us, whether you're Democrat, Republican, right or left or whatever, we all have a common situation going on, which is a totally out of control government that is, I believe, is post-Constitution. Just this week, they put in Merrick Garland and I believe his partner being Bloomberg and Johns Hopkins, which always puts red flags up in my mind, actually are instituting red flag laws federally. I don't know if you saw this new thing about the guns, but it's like a whole registry and they can take your guns. And then it lists all the people that can call. And we know about the other side of the domestic terror thing. You can basically just say to the FBI or DOJ that somebody, you know, posted something or and suddenly you're on a list. They don't need a warrant. But that looks like that's what they're going to try to do with guns now. And it's pretty disturbing how little the Constitution matters at this point in the government of District of Columbia, at least.
No, not certainly not D.C. And yet at the same time, you know, I'm an optimist, you know this. And I know. Because why if you're not an optimist, why even bother?
Anymore, I agree. You know? I feel the same.
They're not as smart as we think they are. They're as evil as we think they are. Yeah. They're not as smart. They make mistakes. And they overplay their hand inevitably. And, you know, and it's coming around, but it's taking a while for January 6th. The overplaying of that hand is becoming obvious. I mean, just a year or two ago, Mel, and you know this, if you wanted to talk about January 6th, a lot of people wouldn't even want to get on your show to talk about it.
Oh, I know.
You know,
I remember 2 years ago, you went to the shore or something and you were with your family and you couldn't talk about it with your own family.
Yeah, right. I mean, there were people. I was getting edited whenever I said anything, you know, positive about January 6th, which I started doing the day after January 6th. Or, you know, I have a podcast. We did one show on January 6th. They pulled it from YouTube, right?
Oh, wow.
Even though it was relatively benign, but they didn't, it wasn't, you know, it just didn't fit with their policy. Well, they didn't throw us off their platform altogether, but. You know,
I was taken off 4 years ago. I never went back because it would have just been, I would have built up again and been pulled off again and built up again. They just changed their terms of service yet again because of the election too, you know. Got to just keep going.
Our show is, by the way, is called Upstream with Cashel and Edge. So look for that. Cool. But we're on all the other platforms too.
Good.
And we just do it once a week. It's kind of a semi-lark, but it is a, I see these efforts, like even closer to home in Kansas City, we're having an election on April 2nd to basically to fund again all the sports teams, right?
Oh, wow.
But at the heart of it is the move of the Royals, the baseball stadium downtown, where the skinny jeans crowd can now walk to the ballpark and, you know.
Right.
Or take little scooters to the ballpark, whatever.
I'm sure that includes hundreds of millions of dollars in contracts as well. That's a pretty big feat.
So they bought off all those people, the people who will gain.
Yeah.
But there's been such a huge grassroots uprising among the just ordinary people against this. We have no media. They've spent millions. Our site has no media except for Facebook, emails, you know. All the kind of the summies thought, like the kind of things they used in the Soviet Union to get around the news coming from Pravda. And it's an unlikely, you know, it's my first time my one counterculture daughter and I have agreed on an issue since she hit puberty. I mean, it's really encouraging. And it'll be interesting. The election's on April 2nd.
What is the reason to move a stadium and uproot at one part of town, and then God knows what'll happen there? Move it to a whole nother, because Kansas City, we were just there and we saw you when we were there. It's very spread out, you know. Yeah. So everything that was probably built around the original stadium was built around the original stadium by design. So then you're moving it, that uproots an entire area and then leaves that one. I've seen that. This happened in Philly where they did this. And the area where they moved the stadium from is still basically dead man's land, no man's land.
Right. Well, now, see, not to get too particular, but the stadium is right in the middle of Jackson County, the county that's paying for this. And it's totally easily accessible, probably the most accessible ballpark in the country. Highways
probably
all
on
in
purpose.
And out. Yeah, right. It was built that way 50 right. years ago. Sits right next to the Chiefs Stadium, and they share a huge parking lot. But, and here's why it's more sinister than it may seem, and it's not necessarily a local issue.
Right.
There's been a movement throughout the world to consolidate and condense people into downtown areas, right. these 15-minute cities.
Yes.
Because they know that once you move into a city, once you become dependent on light rail, once you become dependent on the city to take care of your basic services, you're theirs.
Yeah.
The thing that the planners hate, I mean, I've sat in meetings, I've moderated meetings with the urban planners here, and I've said, you know, they said, what are our assets? I said, well, to me, our asset, number one, is that we have more freeway miles per capita than any city in the world, any major city in the world. And they say, they like look at each other like, what kind of apostasy is that? We don't want you in your cars. We want you downtown. We want you in our city. We want you under our control.
Right.
And, you know, it's interesting because, and this happened in Kansas City, probably elsewhere as well.
Sure.
Our boss, our corrupt, historic Democratic political boss, Tom Pendergast, controlled the streetcar lines.
Well, get out.
And, no, I mean, that's probably true in most cities as well, that the Democratic Party controls the streetcar lines. And if you control the streetcar lines, you control commerce, you control business, you control who gets what. And then when the developers started developing outside the lines and building for automobiles, there was it represented the breaking of that power base and the collapse of the Pendergast machine.
Yeah.
They're trying to basically recreate that. And they're doing it under the guise of like environmentalism, right?
Yeah, I think it's worse than that because I just looked it up. I'll tell you something. So I keep an eye on these Agenda 2030 globalists. It's all about consolidation, track and trace surveillance. So I just went and I looked up, is Kansas City a C40 city? C40 is the World Economic Forum's plan for smart cities. And you bet it is. It is.
Yeah.
We are Climate Action Kansas City, driving climate planning across the state. And there's a whole website on Climate Action Kansas City. That is a globalist Agenda 2030
right.
movement,
right.
which also includes a huge influx of money from these money laundering NGOs and all the people aligned with the globalist thing. And when you're talking about the smart city and the rails and everything, I knew it had to be in that. But I also want to say to everyone out there, if your city is a C40 city, it is already being laid out by the Fourth Industrial Revolution, the Great Reset,
right.
the 17 Sustainable Development Goals. They got a lot of money to sign the city up without telling the people of the city. And I bet you a whole big other part of what they're doing there in Kansas City and many other cities has to do with surveillance and with having you on a grid and everything being connected to the Internet of Body, Internet of Things. Because if you read their work, the World Economic Forum, UN, they all have Agenda 2030 things, all the way to the Bank of International Settlements and NATO and all these. The whole goal is what you're saying, but it's full control, not just in terms of being in the space, but being controlling your behavior, controlling where you can travel, what you can buy, what you can do. This is already rolled out. And this is my biggest problem with America right now is the American people don't realize they have zero privacy right now already before that whole thing comes in. And I just wish people would unite beyond party or anything else under the one thing that we cannot lose, which is freedom and individual liberty. And we are very close, I feel like, to losing it. And then I hear a story like that, and I know immediately this has to be part of the Agenda 2030 goals.
Right. And what happens is the schemers and the dreamers fuse, right?
Yes.
So anytime, the schemers are the guys who just want to get some money for their construction deals and whatnot. I get it. And they meet up with the dreamers who want to create, you know, the environmental
world.
The 15-minute city, you know. But what's interesting about this case, and it's interesting to watch something up close, is that without any real media on our side,
yeah,
And the other side spending millions and they're lying. Just totally dishonest.
I'm telling you, it's because the globalist billion-dollar public-private partnership is really funding that. They're giving them incentives and loans and all of this. It's all through, you know, Larry Fink is at the top of the heap of this this agenda. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the Kansas City workers are all invested through them either. I mean, it's that crazy.
But what you see in terms of response, and this is curious, is that people who are always accepting of the orthodoxy, right, are finally confronted with a move by the elite
establishment,
that is utterly illogical and will make their life more difficult, just for a simple thing like going to a ball game. And so you see this on their like little neighborhood communication sites.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They're historically controlled by liberals. You see these people venturing out of their cocoons. And it'll go someone will say something like this. You know, I don't know if I should say this, but I don't think this downtown ballpark is a good idea. And then there'll be a flood of people. I feel the same way. It's like they're being liberated.
Well, that's like everything else we've dealt with in this journey over the last 4 years almost I've been talking to you, because it's like you think, like, how does everyone not see it? And then when they do see it, they can't unsee it. And I think everyone that's watching this should look at their cities and wonder, because then what is being uprooted where they want to put this too? I mean, there is no, I'm telling you that the parent company that's running America above the government does not care about any of us. It is not. I don't think they care. I don't think they think any of us deserve a voice or vote. I mean, you follow the money, you're going to find that it's the same, basically 10 to 15 globalist billionaires running NGOs that are orchestrating all of this in real time as our government continues pretending to fight amongst itself, where I don't think they really have power. I mean, we're in a very precarious situation. And even though the Kansas City thing is just your city, I'm telling you, this is happening in every city. And it's what you're saying. It's consolidation to control behavior and commerce and everything. And all these people putting out, like getting all these smart technology, smart city, they don't go to the next level to ask, well, where's that data going? I mean, this is where we were walking eyes wide open into this, like, fully surveilled, giving our data to people, which that I'm sure that whole, I think a bunch of stadiums just started making it that you have to have facial recognition.
You're right. And it's like, you know, getting harder and harder. And now just when they have an incident, like the shooting at the Chiefs parade, that gives them the opportunity to control your information much more, you know, to control your coming and going. So they use crime to their own benefit.
Right.
But I think what it also shows, though, and this is, I would say to your listeners, Mel, or viewers, that the place to fight your battles is locally, right?
Yes. Yes.
You can make a difference locally. And you got to be, you know, just keep your eyes open for these things. They're microcosmic representatives of the larger macrocosmic changes that our elites are imposing upon us throughout the world.
Yeah.
Throughout the Western world.
Oh, yeah. And it's a small group of people, I have to tell you. I followed the money and they don't have anything. It's very difficult this time to really see the parent company of planet Earth, because they don't have an allegiance to any flag or any nation or any people or any religion. Right. It's really about power for power's sake, like 1984. And it's not really funny, but it's that insane. I feel like they watch the Hunger Games on a loop and just can't wait till they live in Pan Am. You know, I mean, it's that nuts. But it is really important that you do that. Now, the other thing that you should look at, probably, you said in Kansas City right now over this issue, that there's a tremendous amount of media and publicity backing this. That's also a sign something's wrong.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I just posted something on Facebook because I was driving down our main elegant boulevard. And
it is
all
nice,
those
Kansas
yes
City,
signs.
I have to tell you. I was never there till recently.
And they all have vote yes signs, right? We're on the vote no side. And they have, the issue they have is keep the Chiefs in Kansas City. That's not the issue.
Oh, boy.
No one cares about that. Everyone say, yeah, keep the Chiefs in Kansas City. It's about the downtown ballpark.
My family.
They won't mention it. They bury it. The people who are running, and not just here, but in every city in the country, they don't care about telling the truth. You're here scrupling about, are we, you know, being honest? They're not, you know.
No.
They'll say whatever they have to say.
Yeah, and putting making that all these stadiums, and if you go, I got something. I haven't been to a concert in years, but somebody I really like is coming, so I was like, we'll go. And you have to like download this QR code on your phone before you can go as your ticket. And what I'm saying is that we're allowing this, and we're not asking where does this information on me go? Because I believe that in that infrastructure bill, there was blockchain technology and ledger technology, and that was all, it's in all these executive orders, so much about biometrics and ledger and this. And I think they're setting up the Chinese, so we're going to walk down the street. We all have numbers on our heads with our whole file. And I feel like this is an issue. This is a big problem. I think this is an issue. If the American people fully understood this, they would unite over this. This is something we can find common, you know, cause on, and yet it's impossible to see it because of the distractions. We are right now in $34 trillion worth of debt. We have geopolitical chaos everywhere. The central bank digital currency is looming. The BRICS nations have expanded beyond Saudi Arabia and continue to expand. And all I know is that many experts keep telling me that gold and silver is the best way to hedge against inflation and to protect your savings going forward. Did you know you can convert your 401k and IRA into physical gold and silver today? It can be shipped direct to your door or stored in a secure location. So go to our partners page at themelkayshow.com, fill out the form, and someone from Beverly Hills Precious Metals will get in touch with you right away to help you figure out the best course for you and your family ahead. Stay secure, stay safe, and prepare now.
You know, as they say, all politics is local, and it's at the local level where people are can make a literal difference. Other than just tweeting or, you know, venting, they could actually change the outcome. Yeah. And, you know, there's going to be 1,000 little battles before this is through. And let's hope we win 500 in one of them.
Right. You know? Well, we have to be engaged to fight them. So I ask everyone, wherever you are, check out who your city is in bed with. And if the globalists have already taken over and are
and they probably have.
Yeah.
Because all these cities are the same. Yeah.
Yeah. And before I let you go, though, I wanted to hit on one thing. You have a great article today about Derek Chauvin and that case. And I'm having Liz Collin for a follow up. What came out of the fall of Minneapolis, which I hope everyone that's watching this saw. So what is the takeaway of your you have two articles, so part one and part two. So where are we in that? I honestly, with what they're doing to Donald Trump, I just look at Derek Chauvin as kind of the same thing, the lawfare, the, you know, example, whatever. But I mean, a lot of evidence has come out. You put out so much, not just with this, but you connected the medical examiners from this and Boylan also. I mean, so where are we and what?
And this is kind of interesting. I work with this fellow named Dr. John Dunn, who's a doctor and a lawyer and an expert in emergency care, et cetera. And I was editing an article for him for American Spectator, and I submitted it to the editor, you know, and it was Dr. John Dunn with Jack Cashel. I mean, he was the writer. I don't know, you know, he did the autopsy, broke down. It's very detailed. And then she said, have you addressed this Radley Balco thing? I was not aware of this. Liz Collin is, so you ask her about it. Here's what happened. Liz Collin made a big headway with Fall of Minneapolis. I mean, millions of people saw it.
I know.
She got people involved like Tucker Carlson and Megyn Kelly, et cetera. Then what was more problematic even for the powers that be is that a young Black fellow with the Manhattan Institute named Coleman Hughes wrote an article along the same lines as Liz Collin's, and he placed it in Barry Weiss's
Free Press,
Free Press, it's called. And Barry Weiss is, you know, an apostate from the New York Times and very respected, you know, in that middle ground of people who are just beginning to open their eyes.
Yeah.
And so what Balco did, he had been writing for 9 years for the Washington Post. And then he... now he's a Substack guy. You know, I don't know if he's following or anything. But
yeah, anyone that's still trying to tell the truth is a Substack.
Yeah, right. He knows people. So he went out and just totally savaged Liz Collin and Coleman Hughes. And then he took his information to people like influential Black guys who are intellectuals who are capable of making sound decisions, like Glenn Lowry and John McWhorter, and saying, look at this information I have. You should rethink your support for the Liz Collin and for Colbert News. Wow. And so he was basically set out to reverse the momentum, right?
These people are so evil, like Media Matters.
So I started reading, and the thing is that, you know, he's written 30,000 words, so he knows all the details. Well, so do I. And I know what he wasn't, I knew what he was omitting and what he was distorting.
Right.
And so having, once I got into the Radley Balco thing, I said, I said, John, we'll do your article. I got to do one on my own, just attacking him. And here's what he leaves out. And he's so, his language is so harsh, you know? Like, so Liz Collin will make a claim. He'll go, this is nonsense. And then he said, the people, the producers of The Fall in Minneapolis, and I'm paraphrasing, but I'm close, have no greater goal than to make sure white police officers can get away with murder. Right?
Yeah, I mean, these aren't even really journalists. They're like activist terrorists, like trying to destroy people's lives. This is the Media Matters Saul Alinsky model. And Liz is, not only did she work so hard, but she had all those cops in there that had never told their stories. These grown, tough men breaking down, telling their stories, and this guy's mocking them and calling them liars. It just seems, it's just so, this is what's going on. This is what I was saying earlier about the lack of humanity. The vitriol is so deep and ugly.
It's incredible.
And the media
shocked.
Is pushing it. It's so, go ahead, keep going. I didn't know this.
Here's the one detail that I found most shocking in his thing. The most corrupting element of the Chauvin case was this. The D.C. medical examiner and deputy mayor, a guy named Dr. Roger Mitchell, gets the preliminary report coming out of Minneapolis from Dr. Andrew Baker, the medical examiner. And he calls Baker and he says, what, you're saying no strangulation, no asphyxiation? This can't stand. If you continue with that diagnosis, that report, I'm going to the Washington Post and write an op-ed about you. Basically, and as Baker knew, that op-ed would not only destroy his career, it could endanger his family.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course. At that
and
time
so,
in Minneapolis.
Right. So Mitchell boasts about this to the prosecutors, the state prosecutors, before the trial. So they know this. He said, I called Baker. And then sure enough, he adds neck compression. We needed that to get a homicide. This is all, they all know this, right? Well, first of all, the prosecutors suppress this information. They drop it in the last minute dump on Chauvin's lawyer, never saw it.
Yeah.
And then Balco writes 30,000 words without mentioning Dr. Roger Mitchell.
And he's not a journalist, because he's not a journalist.
He's a propagandist for the state.
Yeah.
And here's where January 6th and the Chauvin trial have a common element. Dr. Roger Mitchell was the medical examiner who oversaw the autopsy of Brian Sicknick and the autopsy of Roseanne Boylan, right? And what he did with those was, if not criminal, it was massively unfair. And it changed the whole dynamic of how America initially thought of January 6th.
Both of those people are also key. Roseanne was beaten to death from what I could see. And I know from people who were there that witnessed this. And they said that it was drug overdose. And Sitnik, you know, it went around for a week that he was beaten in the head with a fire extinguisher. And that never happened. Correct?
No. Right. Here's what happens. Sicknick has a, you know, just a day like anyone else on January 6th. It wasn't stressful particularly. If you're a cop on the beat, January 6th was, you know, a day
especially
off.
Especially in downtown D.C. I
mean, yeah, right, right.
They deal
with
a lot of problems, a lot. Yeah.
On January 7th, Sicknick, who's a good guy, I mean, he was allegedly a Trump supporter. I mean, he's an innocent person in this
right.
whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. He dies of a stroke, right? And in the case of George Floyd, the final formal autopsy report came out 1 week after his death. the preliminary findings were known a day after his death. And the same would have been true with Brian Sicknick. His autopsy was on January 8th. 100 days later, right, under pressure from Judicial Watch, they finally released the autopsy. And well, okay, he died of a couple of strokes. And no, it wasn't related to, first of all, it wasn't related to fire extinguisher. And it wasn't even related to the bear spray. That wasn't an issue. And so,
they led for 100 days to sound like a Trump supporter beat him with a fire extinguisher. It was everywhere. Right. Like, and it's Intel News, the Washington Post, the things coming out of the New York Times. I don't know how these people live with themselves. I guess they think that it's for the cause, I guess the communist cause. I don't even get it at this point. But so that same medical examiner.
One more word, Mel, on that. On January 8th, the New York Times runs a front page story telling how their sources, their two law enforcement sources, Capitol Police,
told
them that Brian Sicknick was rushed out of the Capitol on January 6th with a big gash in his head from where Trump supporters had beat him with a fire extinguisher, and he died. This is on January 8th. By that time, they had to know, right?
They did know. And that was in the New York Times?
Yeah.
I mean, they're so dangerous. These people are so dangerous. They want us to kill each other and hate each other and destroy us. And they have these platforms like the New York Times, the Washington Post, MSNBC. They're making people sick, psychologically sick with false information that's meant to hurt us, I feel.
That's right. And to make sure that message was drummed into America's head, they have Sicknick's ashes in the rotunda of the Capitol held in state. The last person they did that for was Ruth Bader Ginsburg, right? Then they bury him in Arlington National Cemetery. Meanwhile, it goes from being like something like an overgrown panty raid into a murderous insurrectionist assault. And we had to live with that.
With barely any weapons and billions of people that, you know, watched this and thought, you know, something that wasn't true and still do. Many still do. Many still think, I mean, there's people out there that will tell you till they're blue in the face that Trump raped E. Jean Carroll or that he defrauded banks. Or, I mean, we're at a post-truth world. I mean, they'll tell you Derek Chauvin strangled him, you know, George Floyd, and that he deserves all the monuments all over because he was a hero among black men. I mean, everything that we're being told is such a lie.
Or that Roseanne Boylan died of an amphetamine overdose.
Right,
you know?
That she was a drug. Right, when there's actually video of her being beaten and people who got their faces bashed in trying to save her that are alive still and have talked about it, many of them being suppressed. And look, they still want to, I saw Matt Graves, the attorney that has been like on the front lines and giddy about destroying lives of people from January 6th, says that he has about 800 people still that he's going to be kicking their door in at any moment. You know, we just didn't go because it was too cold. But I want to end on, you said to me after you were doing all of this that you had one thought that about January 6th in retrospect about that day and going there that day. And I think a lot of people should realize that we should not be afraid to stand up and join together in peaceful protest because of the aftermath of January 6th. Because right now we honestly should be.
Right. Because, you know, in researching my book, and I profile 10 different women, the book is titled, it won't be out for several months. It's titled Ashley, The Untold Story of the Women of January 6th. And I went through their motives. Why did they go? What was driving them? Because they made huge sacrifices to do it, many of them. And then, you know, I went from raising the question of why did these women go to Washington to why did the rest of us stay home, right? I mean, in retrospect, we all should have been there. Yeah. Just to patriotically and peacefully have our voices heard.
And now people are too scared to do that in a country that was created because of that. And that is
That's
the scariest part of where we are right now. But Jack Cashel, I cannot wait for the book, but everything you write is phenomenal. Cashel.com, as always. We'll put the link below. We'll also put a link to your podcast because you've been doing it for a while. And certainly you always have a lot to say that's positive. And again, you are an optimist, as am I. I feel like they're hitting us from all sides, that every community is getting so battered in one way or another that, you know, other than the influx of illegals, which is the wild card, I think on the other side, people have just had it with DC in general. And I really feel like, you know, whatever's going on in the federal government is not serving us on a massive scale. So I honestly believe that they've overplayed their hand. And like you said, maybe Kissinger and his friends were smart, but they certainly didn't raise smart people to replace them. As far
they're
as
too obvious.
Yeah,
they're exactly. Making the mistake of being obvious. So,
right. Obvious and arrogant. Never a good thing.
Well, yeah, they go hand in hand. You don't become arrogant. You don't become obvious unless you're arrogant, right?
Exactly, exactly.
You don't even need to cover your tracks anymore, you know?
No, they don't even do it. People keep saying, well, they're going to steal 2020. I go, if they are, they're going to tell us.
Yeah, right.
This
right.
time we're going to know way before.
We know they're going to try, you know, it's, but we, yeah, we're going to stop them. And I think we're winning. I know it's little battles and sometimes that don't matter, but no sane, intelligent, rational person is going from our side to their side.
No, not at all.
And they're losing
people
every
day. I agree with you. Yeah. They're creating a majority that does not exist. Yeah. John Stewart put out a new show like the minority can't decide for the rest of us. We know what we want. He did, on one of his first shows, he said, the Constitution is the problem. I'm like, oh God, here we go. They're pulling out the old talk show host to go into 2024. Yeah. That's how you know that they're not so smart and they're quite desperate. So thank you so much, Jack Cashel. I will see you again. And links below for him, please, if you're not already following Jack Cashel, cashel.com, head over there. He's got Untenable still out there. Tons of books before that are phenomenal, especially the Obama book. Thank you so much, sir. I'll see you again.
Mel, thanks a lot. Always a pleasure.
Did you know that there are more than 60,000 known chemicals in tap water? And the EPA only tests for 91 of them? This is why we're so grateful that we partnered with Healthy Hydration. They offer whole home water filtration, shower filters, under-the-counter pre-filters, molecular hydrogen water machines, hydrogen water bottles, and so much more for a healthier home and family. So go to themelkshow.com and click on our partners page and check out Healthy Hydration and everything they have in store for your health and wellness today. Great news, guys. We've been beta testing with my founding members, the Mel K Show, live on Sunday nights at 7 p.m. And it is going incredibly well. We have a community that we all connect. We can share information. Questions are asked of me, of other people. We share back and forth. This is really a place to go on Sunday nights. Get ready for the week. Share what's working, what's not working, how we can make things better, how we can align with each other. Wherever you are in the country, there's many things you can do. So we've added locals now. So on locals, you can also join us on Sunday nights, or you can join members.themelkshowlive.com. The members at MelKShowLive.com is a community for you. That continues 24/7, 7 days a week. We put up many different things there, ideas, documentaries that are great. People tell what they're doing in their local community. They can reach out to other people all over the country. It's kind of has a cool Facebook vibe, but it's really about community, fellowship, helping each other, organizing, all of that. You can also just join locals and join us on Sunday nights where you can ask questions, interact with me. I'm going to have on some of my best guests. It's an incredible platform. It's just getting started. It's totally secure. And please join us Sundays at 7 p.m. locals or members.themelkshowlive.com. I will see you there. This is so much fun and I'm so grateful. And now we have a totally secure community where we can all interact while we are fighting this battle for freedom and our future. See you there.